Berry is celebrating a record year of saving customers money, and the savings continue. Jack Castellaneta, is it true other dealers are complaining they can't compete with your simpler is cheaper pricing?
If those other dealers can't make buying a new car fun and easy, that's not my problem, and don't make it yours. At Formula Nissan, we make it simple to drive a new car, and simpler is cheaper.
But it's not just lower prices, Jack. You've got a great selection.
Because we sell more Nissans, we get more from the factory. You'll find all the selection you need right here.
$4,000, $5,000, even $6,000 right off the MSRP. Jack, these prices are less than we can find anywhere, even on the internet.
All Nissans are built the same, but only the ones at Formula Nissan in Barrie cost less. No matter where you've been or what you've been offered, you'll do better at Formula Nissan.
Formula Nissan, Barrie Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut and at FormulaNissan.com.
Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. It's Friday. We're broadcasting here at the State House as we do during the legislative session. Thank you very much for joining us today. A kind of nice day out there today. We're supposed to be getting a little bit nastier weather here as the weekend progresses. We always lay that at the feet of forecaster Roger Hill. And my goodness, sounds like we're going back into the deep freeze again next week. So if you don't have any long johns yet, maybe you'll pick up a pair this weekend. All right, that's the only clothing advice that I'm going to give you today. All right, coming up on the program today, we got a full lineup for you. At the in our second hour this morning, we'll chat with Senator David Zuckerman, progressive from Chittenden County. He will join us to talk about this proposal to have the state of Vermont legalize marijuana. There was a big study that came out last week. We will chat about that. Governor Shumlin joins us coming up in just about an hour at 10:10 this morning. And too many topics to even list here that we will chat with him about. Later this hour, we will visit with Representative Patty Comline. She's a Republican from Dorset. And we will chat with her about this idea of whether or not Vermont should join the federal health care exchange, given all the problems that have been going on with the state Health Connect program. And we're going to begin this morning and talk about education. We'll talk about not only finances, but we'll broaden the discussion out to education in general. And we, of course, welcome your phone calls on the program. We would love to hear from you. And don't think because we're out on the road that that makes any sort of difference in you getting on the air. It's the same phone call for you. Through the magic of technology that we have here, we will get you on the air. I'm actually able to hear you, and so will our guests be able to do so, too. So give us a jingle at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. I'll give you those numbers again, 877-291-8255. And 244-1777. By the way, coming up Monday on the program, we'll talk with one of the co-authors of that RAND study on marijuana legalization. We begin this morning. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Representative David Sharp. David is the chair of the House Education Committee, and he's a D from Bristol. Thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Do you ever think you'd be a committee chair?
Well, I've wanted, actually, to move up in responsibility, but I didn't really quite realize just how big a lift this is going to be.
Okay. What's it been like so far?
It's been good. I have a great committee. We have been laying the groundwork, bringing money issues into the education committee has been new for the committee and new for most of the members. And I have not sat on the education committee, so some of the policy issues are new to me as they are to some other members. So laying the groundwork, getting our feet wet, if you will, and trying to get ready to deal with these more difficult issues.
Why do you think you were picked?
I have focused, as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, I have focused on education funding for the last several years. I ran a business for 20 years. I taught in the Essex Tech Center for 20 years. Our boys went through the local school system in Bristol and the University of Vermont. So like everybody else, or many other people, I have some experience with education. And I have wanted to, since the days when I was in business and hired some dropouts or some struggling students in training programs in my business, I have wanted to have an effect on education for kids in our state.
What's your business?
Auto repair.
Now, when you took over this committee, how do you figure out what you're going to do this year?
I would, well, we have to do a tax bill. The way that it, the property tax base rates are set is $1.10 for homestead, 2% for income payers, and $1.59 for non-residences. So if we don't change those, that's what they're in statute for. That would be a huge tax increase that we don't need to fill the education fund. So we're obligated to do a tax bill.
Okay.
How much beyond that we can do, I don't know. You know, I would very much like to move forward on as many fronts as we can with 100 ideas that have come forth through the speaker's suggestion and other group that have been working on this, some for decades. And it's time for us to do some really good things for Vermont students and to do it within a tax framework that taxpayers can afford.
Now, usually Ways and Means comes up with tax bills. Is it expected that your committee is going to make a recommendation to Ways and Means? Is that the idea here?
Yes.
Okay. So is it your goal to have a what by the end of this session? A new funding formula? A different way of funding the current formula? Or what?
Well, one of those two, I'd say. We have...
Well, those are two pretty bright categories.
Yes, they are. The committee that met on behalf of the speaker over the summer came up with three proposals. One of those was called the renovation plan, was basically modifying Act 6068 in a way that improved it for Vermont taxpayers. The second piece was moving from a property-based system to pay for education to more of an income-based system. We're going to take a look at that. And there have been, this was introduced, I don't know, by Bud Otterman 6-8 years ago. And it's been, there's been various efforts over the years to try to find a path to get there. There are some big problems. There are some transition costs that that have been as high as $300 million. We have to, if we're going to do that, we have to get those transition costs way down. And there's also been problems with renters. I mean, currently now an owner of a rental property pays the non-residential tax.
Right.
And then the renters, of course, pay a portion of that property tax through their rent. That's been calculated at 21% the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
If we also tax the income of all Vermonters, then people who rent property conceivably would be double taxed. They'd be taxing through their rent and their owner's property tax as well as their income. So I think there are ways to deal with that. There are people working on it in our joint fiscal office, and the sponsor of the bill, Jim Condon, Representative Jim Condon out of Colchester. I'm hopeful that we can get a solid proposal on the table that we can consider.
Talking with Representative David Sharp, he's the chair of the House Education Committee. Do you think there's too much money being spent on education in Vermont?
No. I think that we don't spend it as effectively and efficiently as we can. I think that some taxpayers are paying more than their fair share. I think in some instances we probably are spending too much, but I don't think it's I don't want taxpayers to think that we're going to find a massive savings anywhere and they're going to see their tax bill cut in half. We just, every transition that we've done before in Vermont, in funding schools, we have supplemented property tax with some other tax. The
right.
last time we did that was with Act 68. In 2005, under the leadership of Governor Douglas, we added a penny to the sales tax. I don't see us adding any other taxes to the education fund in order to cut property taxes. So we have to do within the structure of the education fund.
Because, I mean, as you know, there's some people that debate whether or not too much is being spent and whether or not, because of this declining student enrollment, that the number should be going down, the dollar number should be going down.
I think we should be able to hold it. Maybe we can get the number down a little bit. I think we should be able to hold the number going forward. Last year, we passed a much more stringent high spending threshold. That'll take effect next year, I believe. So the proposals in general of these 100 proposals, they kind of break down in three areas. One is larger governance. I think there's pretty widespread belief that some sort of larger school districts or change in governance where flexibility, where we can use educational resources more efficiently and effectively, is going to serve students better and bend the cost curve. The second is this concept of adequacy, that there is an adequate number, dollar figure that we can spend on students and get an adequate education. There are a number of states that use the adequacy concept because it's in their constitution, and they're mostly court-ordered requirements to fund at an adequate level.
Mm-hmm.
Our constitution does not speak of adequacy. It speaks of equity. So we're an equity state, if you will, but we could look at the adequacy concept so long as it doesn't violate the equity provisions of our Constitution.
Is right now, we both are familiar with a woman who lives right in the area here, Heidi Speer, who's laid out an education funding proposal that we talked about here on the program. And she's making the case that as it stands today, Vermont is out of whack with the Brigham decision because you've got communities that are spending vastly different amounts of money on their students. Is that a fair claim to make?
Well, yes and no. I dispute her numbers. I don't think that they're an accurate way to use the statistics that we get. I'm going to look more closely. The committee's going to look more closely at that. But she is right in that kids have vastly different opportunities for education throughout our state. And equity isn't just about money. Equity is about our kids getting a decent shot at a good education. And the Secretary of Education, Secretary Holcomb, has some compelling evidence that there are some students that have a opportunity for a wide variety of, she has a slide, that wide variety of math and science courses, where other students have, you know, very limited opportunities for those types of courses in their schools. Particularly at the secondary level, that's what I mean when I say we could spend our money more effectively and efficiently, is those kids, we need to make sure that those kids have the breadth and depth of educational opportunities that other kids do in the state. And that'll probably cost more money that we can save from the areas of the state that are spending too much.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Waitsfield. Fred, good morning. How are you?
Just fine, Mark. Thank you for taking my call. Representative, are you familiar with the renter's rebate program?
Yes.
Might you explain it to the folks?
Oh, he was actually just talking about it a couple of minutes ago.
The renter's rebate program, where the renters get the property taxes back to them?
Yeah. So what's your question on it?
I'm sorry, maybe I missed that conversation. What I was taking from the conversation was that renters were unfairly paying property taxes and they didn't have any relief, but they do because of the renters rebate program.
Okay, let me have Dave explain this again, because that's not what he was saying. But thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
So in reference to property tax, it was in reference to moving to an income tax base. Now, if we move to an income tax base, we're going to be charged. Right now, we don't charge renters based on their income. And the proposal is that we would charge renters based on their income. And if you believe that they currently pay some of their education taxes through their rent and the owner's taxes, then they would be double taxed. With regard to the renter's rebate, that's similar to the homeowner's rebate for households that have a household income of less than $47,000. And what we do there is we presume that 21% of their rent is allocable towards property tax. We put that through the formula of calculation. And if that results in more than 5% of a renter's income being spent on both municipal and school taxes, then there is a rebate for that renter.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. The governor laid out at his budget address, he talked about this idea of creating partnerships with local school districts. He wants to work with them, not really develop any major new funding program. Again, he used this word partnership, which frankly sounded a little bit one-sided, where you have the state coming in setting goals, and then if they aren't met, there could be consequences that happen. Tell me your reaction to this overall approach that the governor's taking here, no major funding recommendation, and this idea of a partnership.
So I think the proposals around governance that we've gotten and the thinking of many Vermonters is that there are lots of school districts that are just plain too small. And because they're too small, they don't have the flexibility to move staff around. There's an example in Moncton that I went to their school board meeting just this week, that they're going to have 48 students in fifth and sixth grade. And a loss of students in kindergarten. Now, if they were in the same school district, all the other elementary schools in the supervisory union are losing students. So if they were in the same school district with those other schools, other towns, they could easily move a fifth, sixth grade teacher into Moncton for that year. They only need that teacher for 1 year, because the next year the student count is less,
right?
And maybe move that kindergarten teacher into one of the schools that has a growing kindergarten. But that's extremely difficult with our current system. So the idea of having a larger school district really makes a lot of sense. So what we have in place right now is some incentives for voluntarily forming these larger school districts. And we've seen a couple down south, the Mountain Red, I think it's called, and then we have one forming in Chittenden East, yeah, in the Richmond Underhill area. And that's really a positive step forward. It's allowing those districts to save some small schools, actually. Bolton is going to be able to function for at least a couple more years because of this. And it allows this more effective distribution of resources within the school district. However, the voluntary process has been in place for a number of years, and that's it. That's all we got is two. And there are areas of the state where clearly there needs to be governance changes. The proposal last year was widely viewed as Montpelier creating a cookie cutter approach. It really didn't, but that's how it was sold, and that's how people perceived it. So we don't want Montpelier mandating all the communities, this is how you're going to do your school district on the one hand. On the other hand, if we wait for a voluntary approach, you know, it could be another 20, 30 years before we see efficiencies in how we run schools. Mm-hmm. And neither one of those may be unacceptable. So how do we find something in the middle? How do we find something that gets to these larger school districts that make a lot of sense in most areas of the state without the heavy hand of Montpelier? And so that's what the governor was trying to say, I believe. That's what we're looking at in our committee. It may involve identifying the school districts that are really suffering, either because their students have no opportunities or their tax rates are extraordinarily high, and tasking the Agency of Education to going into those communities and meeting with all the stakeholders, the school boards, the select boards, the Rotary Club, and so forth in those communities, and designing a school district for those communities, and then some sort of process to put that in place. So that's what I'm looking for, is some sort of process that is more immediate than waiting another 20, 30 years for a voluntary process. On the other hand, is not directive, so directive that the state is just going out and saying, okay, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to do the other thing from Montpelier.
Do you think ultimately the state's going to have to shut down some schools?
I don't think that's the state's responsibility. That's one of the really good reasons why we should have larger school districts. I think that this Chittenden East District with Bolton and Underhill ID and Jericho and Richmond, they have some decisions to make about the use of their buildings. I think that I've been told, and I think I've driven by them, in Jericho and Underhill, there's two elementary schools within, you know, a mile of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Both with not enough students. So it's likely that one of those schools would close, I would think. Also with Bolton, how's the population stratus there? Are they going to move students from other elementary schools into the Bolton school so they have a robust student population, or are they going to have to figure out a way how to close the Bolton school?
Mm-hmm.
But those aren't decisions that I think Montpelier should be making. I think they're appropriate to be made in the local communities.
Okay, but that's within a district. You just described within a district that has decided to, on its own, make some decisions here. I'm wondering if this process that the governor's talking about, that you clearly embrace and endorse with this partnership, whether it's going to ultimately require that the state come in and shut down some schools.
I would hope not. I would hope that we would form more large school districts like the one in Chittenden East, and that school district and those local communities make decisions about which buildings are going to be school buildings, which ones are going to be magnet schools or an art school, which one's going to be turned into some sort of community center for that community. You know, those are decisions that are much, much better made by an enlarged school district than they are made by Montpelier.
Okay, so are the incentives enough in place that are going to create these larger districts that will then allow those communities to make those decisions, or not, in which case the state is going to have to do something? If you talked before about this voluntary effort, which hasn't really worked. So are there enough incentives right now to create these larger districts so that this voluntary, quote-unquote, approach can work?
So the governor essentially says that the incentives are adequate, and if you don't move forward on these efforts to enlarge the school districts, that the state will come in. I think Vermonters are, I hear more and more Vermonters saying, you know, this has got to happen and that we need to do it in our communities. And I think even school boards who were the big resistors in H883 are recognizing that if we do nothing, many schools are going to close anyway, and those communities will have no say in what happens to their students, and so human nature or the progression of the economy will force it upon them. So this is an effort to help these communities come to a good decision before they're forced to make bad decisions.
There was a presentation, a report that you got this week from a couple of the folks from Penn State talking about consolidation and whether or not it saves money, what it does to communities. What was your takeaway from this report?
That they were very concerned about closing schools. And I understand that. Many communities see their schools as the community center. That needs to continue. The nature of that community center may change. The number of grades that are taught in that school, or whether it becomes a magnet school type of thing where serves the district differently, or becomes a community center in different ways. There are some schools that bring an awful lot of community activities into the school. Adult education or evening meetings or those kinds of community activities, gyms so you have athletics or yoga or those types of activities for adults. So there are many ways that these buildings can be community centers. I encourage, and I hope our bill and our process here in Montpelier encourages communities to do the best things both for their kids and for their taxpayers.
When do you think you're going to know whether you have a funding formula change here?
I would like, so it's been the tradition in the House to have a tax bill out before town meeting day so that voters know what to expect. We did not do that last year. I would like to do that. I would like to go back to that. I'd like to get a bill out of the House. Now, I understand that the action of voters across the state may affect what the Senate has to modify when all is said and done after town meeting day. But I think we ought to give Vermonters an idea on town meeting day where we're at with regard to state taxes, which directly affect where their votes are cast in terms of what happens to their local taxes.
Thanks for your time this morning. We'll chat again soon, I imagine.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Representative David Sharp is the chair of the House Education Committee. I'm sorry I couldn't get to more of your calls. We'll take a quick break here. We'll chat next with Representative Patty Comline. We'll talk a little bit more about education. We'll also talk about health care. We'll take a quick break. Broadcasting live this morning at the State House. We'll be back right after this.
Warm up to a Honda during the winter sales event going on now at your local North Country Honda dealer. Right now, for a limited time, you can save big on your favorite Honda models. Take advantage of aggressive lease prices and special financing rates on select Hondas, like the 2015 Honda Civic, Accord, or CR-V. Choose the new fun-to-drive 2015 Honda Civic with 7-inch display audio, or drive the new in-demand 2015 Honda Accord, rated Car and Driver's 10 Best for a record-breaking 29th time, or lease the new family-friendly 2015 Honda CR-V, Motor Trend's 2015 SUV of the year. The 2015 Civic, Accord, and CR-V all come standard with rear-view camera, Bluetooth hands-free link, eco-assist, Pandora compatibility, and more. Plus, available Honda Lane Watch and Smart Entry. Great prices, great selection, and the industry's best technology make now the perfect time to purchase a new Honda. To learn more, visit your local North Country Honda dealer today, or view all our great offers online at northcountryhondadealers.com.
Maplefields and Irving want you to ski for free. Fill up three times with Irving gasoline at their newest Maplefield store in downtown Newport, just off I-91 in St. Johnsbury, or any other Maplefield Irving locations, and you'll be eligible to receive a buy one, get one free lift pass at great local mountains like Burke, Jay Peak, Smugs, and Bolton Valley. With these new Maplefield locations, a great cup of coffee is never far away when you're on your way for an exciting day at the slopes. Come see them during their grand opening celebration in St. Johnsbury on January 22nd, 23rd, or 24th for awesome specials and prizes. prices.
802 Honda promised super friendly service with low pricing, and you heard us. Thanks to all of our customers for making 802 Honda the fastest growing Honda dealer in Vermont.
At 802 Honda, we love to listen. Our Lease It Your Way program is designed to customize a lease for both your budget and driving needs.
You can drive away every new Honda with absolutely no money down, or pick your payment, and we will show exactly how much money down you need. The biggest myth about leasing is mileage. We're custom designing leases for higher mileage drivers all the time, often with 20,000 miles or more. Let us custom tailor a lease your way.
Find out what many of your neighbors already know. 802 Honda is the only place to get your next Honda. We also have the top-ranked service department in Vermont.
Click on 802honda.com. Call 223-9700. Drive I-89 to exit 7. We're less than 1 minute off the interstate. 802 Honda, driving to be Vermont's number one Honda dealer.
The January sale is now in progress at Hooker's Furniture in Waterbury Center. This is Bart Newhouse. Save 40% store-wide, featuring Sealy Posturepedic with the Core Support Center for maximum comfort and support. For uncompromising luxury, try the Sealy Cool Gel Memory Foam and the Half Inner Spring Half Memory Foam Hybrid Mattresses. Whatever you do in bed, Sealy supports it with fantastic store-wide savings during the January sale, only at your bedding experts, Hooker's Furniture in the Ugly Little Red Building on Route 100 in Waterbury Center since 1889.
Okay, we're back broadcasting live this morning at the State House in Montpelier. Let's give a nice Farm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Representative Patty Comline, R of Dorset. And we're going to talk about health care, but actually first I want to pick up our discussion here we were having with Representative Dave Sharp, Patty, and talk a little bit about education, because I know it's an issue that you've been working on too. So let me get first your impression. The governor's talking about creating these partnerships with local communities and feels that that's the way that some sort of consolidation, lessening of spending can happen. Are you buying that?
I think we need to engage the local communities, absolutely, and work with them and listen to what their challenges are. And I think a lot of their challenges stem from what we do here in Montpelier. So the more voice we give them, the more we can affect change here in the building. So yeah, I think that's important. And I'm hopeful, I'm very encouraged by the changes, by putting Dave Sharp in house education. We were very frustrated in Ways and Means because it seemed like Education Committee was coming up with how to spend more and more money, and in Ways and Means we were challenged with how to pay for education. So by moving the budget for education into that committee, I think will be very helpful.
How confident are you that Representative Sharp and his committee are going to actually come up with a change the way education is funded?
I think we also, for looking at the funding, I'm encouraged that the speaker said we absolutely have to look at the spending as well. We can't come up with a new funding formula without addressing the spending. And I know Dave gets that. Now, change is very difficult for everybody, so whatever they roll out is going to cause quite a kerfuffle in this building. People are going to hear from constituents. But I'm hopeful that people recognize we just can't keep going the way we're going. So we'll see what comes out of that committee.
What should the goal be?
The goal should be to control spending, put us on a sustainable path, and to allow for the best education for our kids. And I think we do provide a very good education. And I would say to make sure that we don't harm that as we're going forward and looking how to control the costs.
When the governor said in his speech that you can't have a one-size-fits-all, can't have a cookie-cutter approach, do you agree?
I totally agree with that. I mean, our communities are very different in the rural areas, and you look at, you know, the more urban areas, and there's different factors that put pressures on costs in these different communities, and we do need to look at that.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Faiston. Freddie, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Just wanted to remind everyone that when this law was, when Act 60 was being proposed, that Doug Racine had a list of 120 small schools that the state wanted closed. And the law so far has not been very successful in accomplishing that goal. The outcry was so great that they put in the small schools grant, and now as we consider taking that away, the uproar is beginning. And I just think we need to remember that that was the goal and consider whether they are forcing us to do that, whether we want to or not. Anyway,
okay.
I'm out of job now, so I have to go.
Okay. All right. Let me have Patty comment on that. Thank you.
Sure. I'm glad you bring up the small schools grant. And when the governor used a term that I've used a lot is micro schools. And I think small schools are, you know, that's quintessential Vermont, and they serve our kids well. I don't think micro schools serve our students well. And we've heard about, I mean, I think it was the town of Granby had 9 students when they finally, you know, closed and merged with another school. I think we need to look again at what's best for the kids and for our students. I think a lot of times it is merging with other communities, and that is something we need to look at. We need to look at that small schools grant and see if that's keeping schools open for artificial reasons just because it's too expensive to close them.
Were you aware that this thing the governor had, 20% of elementary school classes have between 2 and 9 students?
Wow.
I mean, that just, I thought that was, and even if there are only a few that have 2, which is probably the case to make the number the way it is, even if it's 9, I mean, that's, if 20% of them had 9 students, that seems outrageous.
I just don't see how you can give students great opportunities when you're that small. I really don't. And again, some of our areas are geographically challenged, but they would continue under these proposals. They would continue to be able to stay open if they're in an isolated area and the students would have to travel too far to go to school.
Right. I love that. In Vermont here, places that, you know, have mountains around it are geographically challenged.
Well, you can in the winter. You can't get there from here, right?
That's right. Let me have you put those back on here. Let's go to Williamstown. Rama, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Boy, I tell you, a lot I could say, but I need to really restrict it. But one thing is, I think that proposal from the group that Heidi Speer is associated with, despite Representative Sharp's misgivings about it, I think it has a lot of very good potential in there. And I'm heartened to hear that the subject in the State House is starting from the money discussion and working towards the delivery of education from what money is available. I would argue that getting hung up over the size of the schools is the wrong direction to go. It's a matter of if that education, wherever it's being delivered, is being delivered in an affordable way that the taxpayer, the local taxpayers, can shoulder, and then that's okay financially. And, you know, I think a large problem with these smaller schools has more to do with the increasing pressure of more and more licensure and professional requirements being placed on staff that has to go in these buildings that have made things like your one-room schoolhouse literally impossible because of needing to have people with credentials in all sorts of different fields. So there's a lot that can be done, but I'm heartened to hear that you guys are starting the conversation with the money.
All right. Thank you for your call. Anything you want to comment on that?
No.
244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. Our toll-free number is 877-291-8255. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about health care. We'll be back, continue our discussion with Representative Patty Comline after these important announcements.
With the new year comes a few choices that you have to take care of. One of those is getting your car inspected, and Formula Nissan can help in a big way. Jack Castellaneta, you've got something really